Turn now to another busy week of news. With just over 3 weeks to go until the crucial midterm elections, President Trump is headlining rallies almost daily across the country, hammering Democrats and trying to energize Republicans to get to the polls. A cue for the analysis of Shields and Brooks. That is syndicated columnist Mark Shields and New York Times columnist David Brooks. Hello to both of you. It's Friday. So we do have the president, it seems, out on the campaign trail every single day, jetting out to whether it's Tennessee or Pennsylvania or another part of the country. Today, Mark, he's in Ohio trying to energize the Republican vote, the base, trying to get them out. Is it working, do you think?
Republicans feel it's working better than it did 2 or 3 weeks ago, Judy. But I think what is remarkable about it is how constant it is. You said about energizing the base. It's about inflaming people. Donald Trump's message is never about forging a coalition, reaching across the divide, trying to enlist a majority. It's always about coming back to it's us against them, and we may not be perfect, but boy, those other guys are really bad. And I think that's the message. It's going to be a referendum, as it is every midterm, on the president, and his numbers right now are just about the same point where Barack Obama's were in 2010 when the Democrats suffered an enormous defeat, Bill Clinton's in 94 when the Democrats suffered a big defeat, and 2006 George Bush's when the Republicans lost control of the Congress.
But you do have the president, David, out talking about Democrats are part of an angry mob, calling them evil, I mean, using some of the strongest language he's used. Is that likely to get his base even more fired up?
Yep. Yeah, I think it's working. You know, we're in an age of negative polarization, and that means you don't have to like your own party, you just have to hate the other one. And that means it's all about contempt. And has the other side made you appalled? Have they made you feel contemptuous? And one thing the Kavanaugh hearing has done is it made both sides feel the other is appalling. And so that has fired up both bases. And the effect is, and it's always worth reminding ourselves that we no longer have one election anymore. We have a red state election and a blue state election, and they're increasingly disconnected. And so the odds are looking pretty good. The polls have been shifting in the Republican way on the Senate side in all those red states, Texas and Montana and those places. And the Senate is looking more secure as of this moment. The House is looking more endangered for the Republicans at this moment as suburban women move over to the Democratic side. So we have two different elections, and there seems to be pretty strong momentum in opposite directions.
How are Democrats countering this? I mean, this approach by the president, Mark. I mean, there's this a couple of polls, including the one we did with Marist and NPR this week that came out and showed, yes, the enthusiasm gap has narrowed. It was the Democrats who were more energized, mm-hmm. and indeed Republicans seem to be more energized. How do Democrats come back?
Well, the first thing they had to do is stop picketing and stop boycotting and organize. I mean, the most Democratic group in the entire electorate of voters is 18 to 35. And they live everywhere. They aren't concentrated in certain districts like perhaps African Americans or Latinos are. They're everywhere. And if they vote, the Democrats will win big. I will say this. I think the most encouraging sign for the Democrats is the Democrats do have a national macro message in this campaign. It's about checks and balances on president. It's not a new message, but it's a message that certainly resonates with an awful lot of voters. It's about preserving the strength of health care, particularly pre-existing condition provision. But most of all, I think it's contrast to the Republicans who don't have a national message. They really don't. They're running micro campaigns. One district, it's you double parked and you got several parking tickets. You were late on your library books. You missed your mother's birthday. I mean, they're running very personal campaigns in a very micro sense. I think that's good. The final thing I'd say is, look at the governor's races. The governor's races across the country, if you really want to see which way the country's going, they're going blue. They're not going red. When you've got Democrats competitive in places like Oklahoma and Kansas and South Dakota, which they are, right, as we meet here tonight, then, you know, there's a possibility of the Democrats sweeping that entire belt from the Midwest all the way to the East Coast.
We did hear David Al Gore talking about checks and balances, that's a good motivating thing for Democrats. But what about that? I mean, are we seeing Democrats united in some way, in a message that they're
unity is not any party's problem right now. They're all pretty unified. To me, one of an interesting debate is happening. You could call it the Michelle Obama Hillary Clinton debate. And when Michelle Obama famously said, "When they go low, we'll go high," and she's sticking to that, and Hillary Clinton says, "No, they're going low, we got to go low too," and you see that debate. I think in this age, having the moral high ground is a bit of an advantage, a major advantage. And because of Donald Trump's behavior, he has put the Republicans at a moral disadvantage. And staying high, staying reasonably civil, not totally going into the gutter with Donald Trump strikes me as the right Democratic strategy and the right strategy for any movement, because once you go down there, you self-corrupt. And so one begins to see, Eric Holder said, if they go after us, we kick them. You know, you're beginning to see a lot of people getting so angry about Kavanaugh and other things, any means necessary. To me, that is a mistake just for the soul of your party.
Let me say, I agree with David. I think it's not only the right thing to do, but the wise thing to do. I think it's in the best interest of the country. And I'd say at a practical level, you can't compete with Donald Trump. He's just better at it than anybody else.
Identifying
the weakness, a shortcoming of his opponent, and then exploiting it. It is a major talent. He did it serially to each of his Republican challenges in 2016. He did it to Secretary Clinton in the election, and that's really what makes this midterm election. He's searching for an opponent that he can do the same thing.
Yeah, and the politics he specializes in is, I don't really like those kind of people. Like, we used to have debates about health care, about, you know, economic policy, about foreign policy. Now it's just those people are really bad. Those people who say you're bad, actually they're the bad ones. Yeah. And that's a style of politics. Somehow we've gotten away from issues. And the governor's races are, maybe that's a third electorate, because the governor's races tend to be a little more about issues. And they are swinging to the Democrat.
And in one governor's race, I don't know if it's swinging to the Democrat, but it's in Georgia, Mark, where you have Stacey Abrams, an African-American woman, running for governor. She is now pointing out her Republican opponent, who's the state attorney general. Secretary of State. Pointing out that he is, by virtue of an action he's taken in the last few weeks, suppressing the votes, she says, of 53,000 potential voters. What I think most of them, more than two-thirds of them, happen to be African-American. She's trying to make an issue of this, saying he should step down as the Secretary of State. Is that something that, you know, in a place like Georgia is likely to be effective?
Certainly, Stacey Abrams' campaign is interested in registering and turning out African-American voters. The idea of any minority group, especially one that has been a marginalized minority group, electing one of its own to the governorship is a motivating factor to vote. The fact that Brian Kemp, the Secretary of State, has not recused himself, and that his office seems so overtly engaged in a suppression. 70% of the 53,000 people who now, as registration has closed, have been told that they couldn't vote. It does seem beyond bad play or bad form. It really seems like just bad ethics.
As Secretary of State, David, he oversees elections, he's also running for governor.
I don't know how clear the suppression is. The Republicans are claiming that if you come to the polls with ID, you'll be able to vote.
Yeah.
So it's unclear to me how serious that is. But it's a no-brainer that if you're running for an election, you shouldn't be supervising the election. Like, you're the hitter and the umpire, and that doesn't work. And so he should have recused himself long ago, and to me, it's just a no-brainer. That's obviously what you do in any normal circumstance.
Few minutes we have left. I want to ask you about what's been going on this week with Saudi Arabia and the U.S., Mark. The Saudi journalist who disappeared is believed to have been murdered inside the Saudi consulate in Turkey, in Istanbul, Turkey. President Trump and the people around him seem to be holding back in their criticism of Saudi Arabia. The president said it's not good. It doesn't look good. But what should an administration that has had tried to be close to Saudi Arabia be saying right now about what appears to be this unspeakable thing that happened?
Well, I mean, an American administration would be expected to have a moral bearing, a Republican or Democrat, and a moral foundation. This administration, this president, has never made any pretense to it. I mean, he lives by the golden rule, and that is, he who has the gold rules. And he's quite open about it. I mean, he has reduced this. I mean, the charge is so serious that a crew recruited by the Soviet, by the Saudis themselves, by the powers to be, of 15 people went in and took Khashoggi and then dismembered him, went in with a saw that cut up bones. I mean, it is that beyond human decency.
Unimaginable.
So it's unimaginable. So I mean, to me, that's what's missing here, is any sense of morality, most of all.
Just 30 seconds, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, usually when you sell your soul for money, you try to hide the fact, but it's our official policy now that if you're rich and you buy a lot of stuff from us, then you can do all sorts of monstrous things. And it is a commercial mentality that is not what we've stood for all our lives, or not what we would expect in any human being. St. Augustine, you said we have different loves, and some are higher than others, and our love for basic decency should be higher than our love for money.
On that note, David Brooks, Mark Shields, thank you.
Thank you.